Hi, this is Jim with today's edition of Concert Billboard for Tuesday, August 21st. In concert at Jones Beach are the Allman Brothers and Bob Weir and Rat Dog. At Stephen Tuck House in Amagansett, it's Way of the Groove. It's a free show at the Bayshore Bandshell with the Homegrown String Band. That's at 12:30 p.m. At DJ Riders in Oceanside is Albert Castiglia and Breakaway. In the city, for whatever today is, Tuesday, at the Knitting Factory is the Riverboat Gamblers, Valiant, Todi Moshi, and ASG. Playing the Luna Lounge are the Comas and Sam Champion. At Spiegel Tent, it's Jose Gonzalez. And over at Webster Hall is the Format, Piebald, Steel Train, and Ruben's Accomplice. Coming up tomorrow, Wednesday, August 22nd, at Town Green in South Old Hamlet, is a free show with King Scallop and the Oysterettes. That's at 7:30 p.m. In concert at Jones Beach is Meatloaf. Playing the Planting Fields Arboretum, it's Girly Man and Indigo Girls. And over at Deep Wells Mansion in St. James is Tripping Lily. And that's at 8 p.m. And coming up, when? This Thursday, August 23rd, at Planting Fields Arboretum, it's Herbie Hancock. The Nancy Atlas Project is at Stephen Tuck House, and A Crazy Donkey in Farmingdale is Yellow Man. And if you want to know about more shows, go to our website at WUSB.FM and click on Concert Billboard. And here is the thought of the day. Not all men are annoying. Some are dead. Straight and to the point. Hey, and thanks for listening to WUSB's Tony Burke.
Sorry, I'm in shock. It's 6:01. You're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook. It's time, once again, for another exciting edition of Off the Wall.
Thank you.
very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this fine October evening in August here in Stony Brook. We're due for days like this occasionally. It's been hot, it's been humid, it's been miserable, and now all of a sudden it's autumn, and it's pouring rain, chilly. I think it's cool. I wish there'd be more days like this. Sorry about the lack of democracy now, but the computers are down. Isn't that something? See, Stony Brook is a place where you have to adjust your expectations. Yesterday we had no power. They turned off the power because they had to do something. And I don't, did we lose the phones? There was talk that we were going to lose phones. In the old days, this didn't happen. Phones were always there. But now they have to fix something so they, yeah, you're not going to have phones for 12 hours or something like that. It's typical here at the campus where basically one day you might not have hot water, one day you might not have heat, might not have phones, computers, air, whatever it is they decide to cut off. Although, you know, I really shouldn't be complaining because this is like the first day in months that there's actually real air coming into this room where you can breathe. It's not hot air, it's cool air. Of course, figures it would be the coldest day of the year so far, but I'm not going to complain. Just going to take note, that's all. Not complaining. Well, I'm back. Actually, I'm back just for a little bit, though. I was away in Germany, in Holland, in England for the past couple of weeks. And next week, I'm going to a completely different place. In fact, if there are any listeners in Malaysia or Singapore, please send us email, otw@2600.com, because a few of us are going to be wandering around your area for the next couple of weeks. But next week, on this show, you will not be hearing me from Malaysia or Singapore. You'll be hearing me from Germany, which was in the past. But that's sort of how it works. And you will hear me in Malaysia and Singapore sometime in the future. Just like last week, you heard me in China, which was from the spring, and the week before that, yeah, you heard me from North Korea. And by the way, we didn't give out the email address enough, I don't think, on those shows, because we get so much more feedback when we're here live in the studio, and we're constantly hammering the email address down your throat, or whatever the term is. otw@2600.com, that is our email address. So if you listen to the North Korea or China shows, please send us your feedback on those. And if you didn't listen to them, well, they're online, www.2600.com/off-the-wall. It's always fun to come back to this country after being away, even only for a couple of weeks. It just feels different. It feels weird. Things look different, things feel different, things sound different. And you come back with all sorts of new perspectives, or just altered perspectives. Some for the better, some for the worse. When you go to a hacker camp, though, and you might not even know what that is. A hacker camp basically is when a bunch of computer hacker-type people, usually German or Dutch, take over some plot of land for up to a week and basically set up tents and make the internet work. You know, we could use them here in this room right now. We don't have the internet, but out there in the middle of nowhere in a camp field in Germany, we had great connectivity. A variety of networks, wireless, wired, you name it. Electricity, a degree of plumbing. It was just cool. It's just cool being in a situation like that where all the rules are somehow changed a little bit. You wake up in the forest every day instead of in your room. And you're sleeping in a tent in a sleeping bag. But yet somehow you're able to stay in touch with people because you can just plug your laptop in. In fact, you can leave your laptop in your tent in the forest, unlocked. And I think there was one laptop that was ripped off out of, over 2,000 people for over 5 days, leaving all their stuff just lying around. I think that's incredible. And we always say that we can never do that here. I don't know, maybe the word never is a little too much. But we're a long ways from doing something like that here, only because of attitude. In addition, the difficulty of getting from one place to another, and people having to get along together and stop fighting with each other, and, of course, having to believe that we can rise to such a situation. where they don't have to lock everything up and watch out for each other and carry guns, because who knows, the other person might be carrying a gun. So you got to take care of yourself that way and strike them before they strike you. Yeah, we have a lot of attitudes we have to overcome. But we can do it. Just might take a while. So, yeah, that was where I was over the past couple of weeks. Went through London, saw the London 2600 meeting, and that was a whole lot of fun. They take over the second floor of a pub and just sort of hang out there all night long, and it's really a cool setting. And pubs in England, I swear, they're like nothing else. They're like no other bars you can ever go to. Basically, where else can you go to a pub that's carpeted? It's got this nice carpet on the floor, something like what your grandmother might have. And you have all these people, some in suits, some not in suits, young, old. And I mean it, young and old. People from age of 18, which is the drinking age there, up into the 80s, hanging out together. No overly loud music being played. Just people hanging out and spilling out into the street. It's the most incredible thing. You just walk down the street and there are pubs everywhere and people are just hanging out even across the street from the pub with a pint of beer in a glass. Yes, in our country, we'd be concerned over the fact that you took a glass and crossed the street with it. That glass is our property. What if you don't come back? Yeah. Never mind the rules against it saying, well, you have alcohol open to the sky, you know, and other people can see the alcohol and it's a bad influence on them. And who knows what will happen? That's a crime. That's a crime. You got to wrap it in a paper bag or hide someplace. Act like a criminal. Yeah, it's all about different ways of doing things. In Amsterdam, you walk down the streets, and there are all sorts of different things. You'll find little tourist shops, and next door to that will be a kindergarten, and like down the block from that, a sex shop. Yeah, a sex shop that has all sorts of shocking things in the window. Little children walking right past it and not being scarred. Not being scarred for life. Just, it's part of the culture. Yeah, we can't handle that. That's for sure. And Germany, of course, laid back as ever. Where you can get onto the subway system, what they call the U-Bahn and the S-Bahn, and not have to go through a turnstile. The way the system works, you buy your ticket, and you stamp it yourself through the little machine, and you have it on you. You have the appropriate ticket on you for the train that you're on. And you're trusted to do that much. Now, if you get caught without a ticket, you get fined. Makes sense. But they don't assume everybody doesn't have a ticket. They assume people do. And occasionally they do a surprise check, and the people who don't are caught. And I'd say, if not all the people, 90% of the people have valid tickets. And you just get on the train so much faster. You just walk into the station, there's the train, you get on it, you get off the train, you walk out of the station. None of this fumbling for metro cards and change and things like that. You take care of all that yourself. You act like an adult. You're treated like an adult. All these rules aren't being constantly thrown into your face. I think if America could be summed up in a symbol, I think that symbol would be the stop sign. We've all seen it. Just the big red sign with the word stop on it. That's us. We have more stop signs, I think, than anyone ever has had in any country. I guess we invented it, right? Did we invent the stop sign? Who can figure out who invented the stop sign? I would go to Wikipedia, except I don't have internet access. I'm sure Wikipedia has the history of the stop sign. But seriously, our solution to everything here is to put up a big stop sign. Look around your neighborhood. Every single intersection has to have a stop sign, because if you don't have the stop sign, everyone's just going to keep going and running into each other because they don't have the common sense to look out and to yield and to do various things like that. Yield signs. I like yield signs. If you ever want to see something that's interesting, go. There's this neighborhood near us It's to the east a little bit. It's one of these rich people-only neighborhoods, which I usually don't like. But in this case, it's an interesting experiment in sociology, I guess. The exit to their the neighborhood known as Belterre, instead of having a stop sign when it gets to, what's the road called, East Broadway? When it gets to East Broadway, which is where the rest of us live, you know, the real world starts there, and Fantasyland is beyond the gatehouse or whatever they have at Belterre. Instead of having a stop sign, they have a yield sign. Yeah. So they don't have to make a full stop. They can look for traffic, and if there's no traffic, they can just go without stopping. And for the most part, they're pretty responsible. They always yield to people that are on the main street. But they don't have to make that full stop if there are no cars there. Wouldn't that be nice if every stop sign was actually a yield sign? Well, you'd yield it to traffic that was already there. You can do it. It's possible. Other countries do it all the time. It may seem like a small thing, but it sort of gets ingrained in your head when you're constantly being told what to do, when to do it. At big intersections with traffic lights, first of all, we have a million traffic lights at every intersection. Just so there's no misunderstanding, a red light is there. You have six of them staring you in the face. Other countries, you have one. And at night, when there's not a lot of traffic, it turns into a flashing orange light. Why sit there for 10 minutes waiting for a directional arrow to turn on so you can make a left turn when there's nobody else around? But here, that's the only way we know. Yeah, I know, it seems like a very silly thing to be upset about. But I think it sort of shapes who you are. When you don't have the rules constantly hitting you in the face, you don't know what to do. And you mess up, and then you blame the people who didn't tell you what to do, because how could you possibly know? It's really pretty sad. The other thing that gets me, and this is also driving-related, in every country that I've been to, including North Korea, including Cuba, and all those other countries all around the world, they have what's known as a universal system of signs where you don't need language. So, for instance, the stop sign. You don't need the word stop. Just the symbol of the stop sign is enough. The shape of it, the color, you know that means stop. Don't need to know the language. Do not enter. We all know what the do not enter sign looks like. It's got that little white bar in the middle of it. The yield sign, the triangular yield sign. You don't need the word. Now, they have other signs, too, that mean different things. For instance, a circular sign with a blue background and a slash through it. Have you ever seen that? I've seen it many times, but I've never seen it in this country, not once. It means no parking. And the same sign with an X through it, blue background, circular, with a red X, that means no stopping. The whole world understands this. But we insist on making those stupid little rectangular things that say no parking with specific hours. You can still have the specific hours. But what is the harm in having the international symbol? Just so we're on the same page as everybody else, so people visiting our country from other lands will understand this is a no parking sign. Why must we always set ourselves apart? Why must we always be different for stupid reasons? So if there's anyone out there who has the power at any point in their lives to make a decision as to what kind of a sign to put up on a street someplace, to make this a no parking zone, to make this a no stopping zone, can you just do me a favor, please, and keep the regulations, whatever regulation you want, but have that little symbol there. The international no parking, or the international no stopping symbol. Just as kind of a symbolic nod to the rest of the world that we're aware of your presence. It's like, you know, the metric system. And our stupid system, why is it that we have such trouble taking that step that the rest of the world has taken? Why can't we do simple things like this? Have to be different, but for no good reason. I like being different. Being different is great. But when it's just to be stubborn, or because you don't think you can handle change, those are the wrong reasons. So, yeah, those are some of the thoughts I came back with. Seems kind of strange, I know, but there you go. I brought back some newspapers, too, some newspaper clippings. I always like doing this, just to show you the difference in various cultures. And, okay, just so people know, England is absolutely insane and crazy. They always have been. They always have been utterly mad. And now with all the surveillance going on in London, which is a whole other issue, it's kind of creepy, to be honest. But just the some of the habits, some of the ways people talk, ways people address each other, ways people live, to us, it just seems so bizarre and nutty. I'm going to read you a letter from a newspaper. I think this is, which paper was this? Was this the Evening Standard? I believe this was the Evening Standard. And here's a letter to the editor. Now, keep in mind, I have no idea what the history behind this was, but this is a typical type of a letter that you might find in a newspaper. First of all, they all begin, sir. Obviously, they don't all write, sir, but that's the greeting that's inserted into every letter that's printed in this particular newspaper. And the title of this letter is Baked Bean Bombs. Yeah, Baked Bean Bombs. I'm not kidding. And here's the letter. Sir, further to your previous correspondence, August 14th, in 1929, I had rooms in Kellis College and had invited two friends to lunch. I put a large tin of baked beans and a saucepan of water on the coal fire and went out to buy slices of cold ham. While I was out, there was a large fall of soot, which spilt all the water out of the saucepan, and the tin of baked beans under a foot of soot became red hot and exploded. My late father, born in 1858, enjoyed 2 years of correspondence with the college over the cost of redecorating the room and the furniture. Signed, Dick Jarrett, FRCP, Painswick, Gloss, GLOS. I don't know what that means. Maybe Gloucester? What in God's name are they talking about? Big beans exploding in 1929? What possible previous correspondence would invite that kind of a discourse? I would love to know. It's just absolutely insane. I love it. There are letters like this all over the place. You realize Monty Python, they weren't making it up. This is how people really talk and act. Okay, what else? While I was over there, actually right before I left, there was this whole big commotion. Actually, there's always a whole big commotion about one thing or another. But in this particular case, right at the airport that we were leaving out of, Heathrow, there were these protesters. People are protesting the expansion of the airport, and they're doing so by camping out right adjacent to the airport and causing all kinds of paranoia as to what it is that they're going to be up to, and extra delays and all kinds of traffic and things like that. So that's what everybody is talking about now, whether expansion of air travel is a good idea, whether Heathrow is too big and too noisy. And this is something else I saw in the newspaper concerning the just the act of protesting in general. And I thought it hit upon some very good points. Protesting is one of the joys of youth. I won't be saying this later in the month when I try to board a plane to Ireland with two toddlers in tow, but I'm rather loving those Heathrow protesters. It's not so much their cause, which is noble but unrealistic. It's them. Their smooth, tanned skin, the artfully unkempt hair, their sweet earnestness. For most of us, climate change concerns are secondary to our day-to-day responsibilities, jobs, mortgages, children. We barely have time to recycle our milk cartons, let alone set about trying to save the planet. Only the very young can afford to be full-time protesters, as Claire Blatchford, 20 years old, fresh from a four-month stint demonstrating at a naval base in Scotland, described herself this week. She was combining principle with pleasure, happily topping up my tan while she got stuck in. Growing up is, sadly, all about revising expectations. Maybe the protesters really will put a stop to the new runway, but even if and when they don't, they'll have restored my faith in the next generation. And I won't hold it against them, honestly, when they grow up, get jobs, and find themselves flying business class to New York twice a week. And that was from Sarah Vine, also in the Evening Standard. I think the Evening Standard. They have so many newspapers over there, it's hard to keep track. But, yeah, that's something to think about. If you're young and you have time, why not be idealistic? Why not be a little naive and think you can actually change things? Why not get out there and be vocal? And the rest of us should be doing it, too. But, yeah, it is kind of hard when you have mortgages and kids and things like that. Not impossible. Not impossible at all, but a little harder. All right. So that's some of the news from England. And, of course, the Chaos Communications Camp, magic as always. The CCC, Chaos Communications Club, the Chaos Computer Club. Yeah, I'm sorry, there's so many CCCs. There's the Chaos Communications Congress, Chaos Communications Camp, Chaos Computer Club, all CCCs. And you can find out more about them, ccc.de. They have some of it in English, at least. But once every 4 years, they have an outdoor hacking event. And this was the longest one ever. This was 5 days long. And next week, we'll be doing a special on that while I'm somewhere else. Where will I be next week? I think I'll be in Singapore. I'm not sure. I don't know. The international dateline always confuses me. Here are some of the golden rules from their program. This is what you were handed when you went to the campground. Treat other life forms as you would like to be treated, or even better, have lots of fun together. Respect other people's space. They're on vacation, too. Limit the amount of noise you make. Respect other people's property. The campground is an outdoor museum with rare airplanes. That's right, there were MiG fighters on the ground next to us and all sorts of weird Soviet-style artifacts. Please treat them nicely and don't break or attach anything to them. Respect the needs of your body, sleep and eat regularly, and drink lots of water. Use a good sunscreen, wear a hat, and stay out of the sun if it's really warm. Free water is available at the water station next to the showers. In case of an emergency, stay calm and call a particular person immediately via a DECT phone at 110. Be careful with your litter, especially sharp objects and loose wires/cables. Tripping over things in the dark can result in painful screams. Open fires are not permitted. We have a designated fire area at the marketplace. Yeah, the marketplace. They had Thai food. They had Indian food. They had all sorts of neat things in the marketplace. And a bar, too. Cooking on gas or electric camp stoves is fine. A word about press. There may be journalists, photographing you, rather, and your gear, or asking to interview you. Consider camping in the no-camera camping area if you don't want to be photographed. Ask them nicely to leave you alone if they bother you. Have fun and enjoy the camp. That's pretty much all you needed. Pretty much all the guidelines that you needed to be handed for 5 days of fun. And it was really an incredible event. If you missed it, you missed something really cool. And not enough Americans showed up. Need more next time. Next time should be in 2009 when the Dutch take their turn and the Germans 4 years from now. My God, 2011. All right. Speaking of unbelievable things, I want to play you something. I want to play you something that a wise man once said. All right, maybe I'm going a little bit too far, but I want to say something. I want to play something that somebody said that I agree with. It's about Iraq. This was in 1994. Listen to these words and tell me if you don't think they make perfect sense.
Do you think that the U.S. or U.N. forces should have moved into Baghdad?
No.
Why not?
Because if we'd gone to Baghdad, we would have been all alone. There wouldn't have been anybody else with us. It would have been a U.S. occupation of Iraq. None of the Arab forces that were willing to fight with us in Kuwait were willing to invade Iraq. Once you got to Iraq and took it over, and took down Saddam Hussein's government, then what are you going to put in its place? That's a very volatile part of the world, and if you take down the central government in Iraq, you can easily end up seeing pieces of Iraq fly off. Part of it the Syrians would like to have to the west. Part of eastern Iraq the Iranians would like to claim, fought over for 8 years. In the north, you've got the Kurds, and if the Kurds spin loose and join with the Kurds in Turkey, then you threaten the territorial integrity of Turkey. It's a quagmire if you go that far and try to take over Iraq. The other thing was casualties. Everyone was impressed with the fact that we were able to do our job with as few casualties as we had. But for the 146 Americans killed in action and for their families, it wasn't a cheap war. And the question for the president in terms of whether or not we went on to Baghdad and took additional casualties in an effort to get Saddam Hussein was how many additional dead Americans is Saddam worth? And our judgment was not very many, and I think we got it right.
Did you recognize that voice? Yeah, that was the voice of Vice President Dick Cheney in 1994. This was taped on April 15th, 1994. And I had not heard this until very recently. Showed up on a site called technorati.com. And wow, he gets it right. Absolutely. Going into Baghdad to take out Saddam Hussein would not be worth it. How many American lives do you want to waste on this? It's a quagmire. No other Arab nation will support us. What happened? All of that proved to be true. And now, what, 4,000 lives later? Have we learned it yet? It's simply incredible how something so obvious is just cast aside. What changed? What happened? What's different now? And please, not 9/11, because the Iraqis had nothing to do with that. We all know this. We knew it then, too. After 9/11, not in 1994, obviously. I just wish somebody would ask him to his face, what's up with that? How could you say this then and support this now? But we don't get that kind of access. We don't get that kind of opportunity. And the people who do have the opportunity, they don't take it. And the Democrats who are supposedly opposition, they're not opposition at all. They just voted in more surveillance than Bush was asking for illegally. They just gave it to him legally, for no reason. All this nonsense could have been stopped months, years ago, if anybody had a spine, but nobody seems to. Nobody seems to, and it's more distressing and worrying every day, and we seem to care less and less every day. Okay, what else is going on? I wanted to play this, actually. In the current edition of 2600, to completely change the topic and the flow of everything, current edition of 2600, we have something known as the puzzle, which basically, if you try to solve the puzzle, you can stop because about 5,000 people have solved it already. And they even got the first quarter puzzle, which nobody figured out until recently. We had to scold people in the second quarter to get them to respond to the first quarter. So those puzzles are all solved. But there was another puzzle. There was one that was hidden. Hidden on, I think, was it the table of contents page? If you look really, really, really closely on the table of contents page, you'll see in tiny, tiny print, you'll see a phone number. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to call the phone number. And first I'm going to make sure that this is working. We're getting an actual signal. Can I have a dial tone, please? Okay, I hear a dial tone. That's good. We're going to call this number and listen to what happens when it picks up. And then we'll explain it. So far, one person figured it out, and I'm amazed that someone was able to do that. No one else has. Because it's difficult. It's hard. First, you have to find the phone number. First, you have to know there's something hidden on that page, and you have to find it. This person found it. And they called the number. And let's Let's do that now. We have an outside line. Okay. Whoops. I'm sorry. I hit it once. It dialed it twice. It wasn't my fault. Can we try that again? All right. Dialing the number now. And, yeah, you can't tell what the number is because all these beeps sound the same. And here we go.
Cero.
Okay. There you go. And yeah, a beep. You can now leave a message. And we were able to hear the messages, and a lot of people were very perplexed and kind of confused after listening to all that. Yeah, it was in Spanish. But first, before we get to the Spanish part, at the very beginning, you heard those tones. That was actually Morse code done at the frequency of a dial tone. And if you're able to figure out the Morse code, then that would translate to send all translations to the webmaster. Yeah, so there's your first clue right there. Send all translations to the webmaster. I guess including that one, because that's a translation too. All right, so then you have to find a number, a little tiny number on the table of contents. Then you had to call the number, listen to this, translate the Morse code, and then, obviously, all those numbers were read off in Spanish. So you had to translate Spanish to English, unless, of course, you already knew Spanish. And then you notice that they were read off in three-digit increments. So in English, the first few were 001-279-087-588, etc. Okay, so what do these numbers mean? Well, obviously, the grouping them into threes must be significant. Well, it doesn't have to be, but it is. We put this together. Trust me, it is. So 001, what do you think that might mean? Could it be the letter A because it's the first letter of the alphabet? 0 plus 0 plus 1 is A? Well, let's say it is. Then what's 279? 2 plus 7 plus 9. That's 18. And the 18th letter of the alphabet is, of course, R. Then 087, well, that's got to be O. 588, U. Interesting. Okay. If you do that, you can come up with a message, and that message, once you translate the entire thing, put it all together, you'll get this. Around now, you will realize that this is a diversion for the answer. Ignore 2 and 3 and follow instructions. Oh, we love to torture people. We just love it. So yeah, you translate all of that, and you find out it's a diversion. If you want the answer, you have to ignore something known as 2 and 3 and follow instructions. Well, what could 2 and 3 mean? The numbers 2 and 3? That's a possibility. Seems kind of silly, though. What if, though, you ignore the second and the third numbers in each sequence of three numbers? So, in other words, the first one, 001, you ignore 2 and 3, so you just have 0. And then for the second one, 279, you ignore the 7 and the 9, you just have 2. For 087, you ignore 87, you just have 0. And look what's happening here. You have leading zeros in many of these groups. Those leading zeros, since they don't correspond to a letter, they must be breaks of some sort between letters. Why do you need breaks? Well, because let's say you need to have the letter T, which is 20. You can't represent that with a single digit. So you'd have to have a leading 5 and then a leading 7 or something adding up to 20 before you separate it with another 0. It's nice to be able to confuse people. I like it. I feel like a mathematician. Anyway, if you do that, if you just take the leading numbers, separating them with zeros, adding whatever is between the zeros together to make other letters, what do you get? You get be the first to email answer to 2600. And that last part, 2600, was a whole bunch of zeros, so that was kind of cool, too, the way that worked out. And there you go. Not really a particularly significant message, but one that only one person was able to get. And I'm very, very impressed. And in fact, I'm also very impressed that the person who got this, Golden Helix, congratulations to you, was also the person to figure out all the Easter eggs, or the most Easter eggs, on the Freedom Downtime DVD. So that was simply incredible. Sent us the Morse code message, sent us the first message and the second message, figured out the phone number, translated the Spanish, emailed the right place. You know, the one thing that you got wrong, you typed in the phone number, you got the area code wrong. I thought that was pretty funny. But obviously, you dialed the right area code. And it's proof that there are weird things out there. Sometimes it's fun to waste a lot of time and figure them out. I just can't believe anybody actually got it. I also can't believe anybody got the official puzzle in the spring issue, which will be printed in the autumn issue. The answer, that is. Okay, so congratulations to thinking people out there who figure things out. That's always fun, always good. We have other things to cover. And this is particularly sad, actually. You may have heard the name Joy Bubbles. If not, maybe the name Joe Ingressia. If not that, maybe the name High Rise Joe. If you listened to Off the Hook earlier this year, we played an excerpt from an interview with one of the most famous phone freaks of all time. Joe Ingressia was a blind phone freak who knew just about everything there was to know about phone switches. The knowledge he had was simply incredible, something that most of us can never attain. He passed away August 8th in Minneapolis. We found out about this at the Chaos Camp, in fact. And I'm going to read this obituary from the New York Times, and I have to say, this is why I love the Times, because they will actually devote this much space to somebody who, I guess to most people, is somebody that was insignificant. But obviously to our community, obviously to people that are into technology, into exploring, into figuring things out, this guy was an icon. Strange icon, admittedly, but an icon nonetheless. Joy Bubbles, the legal name of the former Joe Ingressia since 1991, a blind genius with perfect pitch who accidentally found he could make free phone calls by whistling tones and went on to play a pivotal role in the 1970s subculture of phone freaks, died on August 8th in Minneapolis. He was 58, though he had chosen in 1988 to remain five forever and had the toys and teddy bears to prove it. The cause of death has not been determined, said Stephen Gibb, a friend and the executor of the Joy Bubbles estate. And just the fact that they refer to him as Joy Bubbles throughout the obituary, I think, is significant as well. Shows respect. Joy Bubbles, who was blind at birth, was a famous part of what began as a scattered, socially awkward group of precocious teens and post-teens fascinated with exploring the phone system. It could then be seen as the world's biggest, most complex, most interesting computer, and foiling the phone system passed for high-tech hijinks in the 70s. It was the only game in town if you wanted to play with the computer, said Phil Lapsley, who was writing a book on the phone freaks. Later, other blind whistlers appeared, but in 1957, Joy Bubbles may have been the first person to whistle his way into the heart of Ma Bell. Freaks were precursors of today's computer hackers, and like some of them, Joy Bubbles ran afoul of the law. Not a few freaks were computer pioneers, including Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak, founders of Apple. Joy Bubbles felt that being abused at a school for the blind and being pushed by his mother to live up to his 172 IQ had robbed him of childhood. So he amassed piles of toys, Jack and Jill magazines, and imaginary friends, and he took a name, he said, made people smile. But he never lost his passion for phones and old phone freaks and younger would-have-beens, kept calling. Joy Bubbles loved the phone company, reported problems he had illegally discovered, and even said he had planned his own arrest on fraud charges to get a phone job. And so he did, twice. Well before the mid-1970s, when digitalization ended the tone-based system, the EMF tones, the blasting 2600 hertz down the line, that kind of thing, Joy Bubbles had stopped stealing calls, but he was already a legend. He had phoned around the world, talking into one phone and listening to himself on another. You talk into the phone and there's a long delay and you come back maybe 20 seconds later. It's the most amazing thing. Don't know if you can even do that. Well, actually, you can do that. Some cell phone companies seem to have that feature. Anyway, in an article in Esquire in 1971, the writer Ron Rosenbaum called Joy Bubbles the catalyst uniting disparate freaks, particularly after news accounts of his suspension from college in 1968 and conviction in 1971 for phone violations. He became a nerve center of the movement. Every night he sits like a sightless spider in his little apartment, receiving messages from every tendril of the web, said Mr. Rosenbaum. Joseph Carl Ingresia Jr. was born May 25, 1949, and moved often because his father was a school picture photographer. What a strange career. School picture photographer. Wow. At 4 or 5, he learned to dial by using the hook switch like a telegraph key. 4 years later, he discovered that he could disconnect the call by whistling. He found this out when he imitated a sound in the background on a long-distance call, and the line cut off. It turned out that his whistle precisely replicated a crucial phone company signal, a 2,600 cycles per second tone. Joy Bubble's parents had no phone for 5 years because of their son's obsession. Later, his mother encouraged it by reading him technical books. His high school yearbook photo showed him in a phone booth. By the time he was a student at the University of South Florida, Joy Bubbles was dialing toll-free or non-working numbers to reach a distant switching point. Unbeknownst to telephone operators, he could use sounds to dial another number for free. He could then jump anywhere in the phone system. He was disconnected from college after being caught making calls for friends at $1 a call. In 1971, he moved to Memphis, where he was convicted of phone fraud. In Millington, Tennessee, he was hired to clean phones, a job he hated. In 1975, he moved to Denver to ferret out problems in Mountain Bell's network. He tired of that and moved to Minneapolis on June 12, 1982, partly because that date's numerical representation of 612, 612, is the same as the city's area code. I kid you not. He advertised for... That's the only reason he moved to Minneapolis was because he did it on June 12th? Wow. You'd think Minneapolis would draw you for some other reason. You guys need to work on your image a little bit. People need to be attracted to you for more reasons than the cool sound of your area code. Anyway, he advertised for people yearning to discuss things telephonic and weaved a web of phone lines to accommodate them. He lived on Social Security disability payments and part-time jobs, like letting university agriculture researchers use his superb sense of smell to investigate how to control the odor of hog excrement. Yeah, Joy Bubbles is survived by his mother, Esther Ingresia, and his sister, Toni Ingresia, both of Homestead, Florida. His second life as a youngster included becoming a minister in his own Church of Eternal Childhood and collecting tapes of every Mr. Rogers episode. When asked why Mr. Rogers mattered, he said, "When you're playing and you're just you, powerful things happen." And that's the obituary for Joy Bubbles, who passed away August 8th in Minneapolis, from the New York Times. And hats off to them for devoting so much space to a very unusual but beloved person in the phone freak culture. And if you want to listen to the program where we interviewed him, I'm not sure which program it was exactly, but if you type Joy Bubbles, one word, into the search engine on the 2600 main page, you'll find the show, and you can listen to it there. And you'll see just how incredibly articulate this guy was as far as identifying things and being able to immediately access a particular switch to demonstrate to you what it sounded like. It was one of the most interesting interviews I've ever done, and I'm honored to have talked to him at that point. Okay, kind of running out of time, so let me try and get to a couple of letters. This is our last normal show, if you want to call it that, for a few weeks. Next week will be the Germany special. And weeks after that, we'll be doing things from Malaysia and Singapore. Again, if you're in Malaysia or Singapore, write to us, otw@2600.com. If you have anything to say, otw@2600.com. Feedback on last week's China show. I was wandering through the streets of Beijing, or the week before that, where I was in Pyongyang, North Korea, having all sorts of adventures. Write to us, otw@2600.com, because hearing from you is what it's all about. Dear Emmanuel, I've been trying so hard to get my friends to realize what is going on around them. They seem to be content, not knowing what is going on around them, giving the argument that they wouldn't like their happiness jeopardized, which would happen if they knew how things were. They keep telling me that I am just a kid and I need to live life as a teenager and worry about all that stuff later in life. They say there's nothing I can do to help. I guess I'm just writing to you for support as I am beginning to feel that there isn't anything I can do to help. What can I do to get my friends to realize that what happens is affecting them? How can I get my voice heard without the support of my peers? Signed, Freak Dude, spelled with zeros, fours, and a three. And Freak Dude loves to listen to Off the Hook and Off the Wall. You know, I gotta say, there are many people in your position who feel kind of powerless and helpless and not listened to. There's a reason people believe that it's best to ignore the world around them. Because it's easy. It's easy to not pay attention. It's easy to assume somebody else is going to do the right thing. And that we're just here to have fun and ignore the bad stuff. And I'm all for having fun, and I'm all for not dwelling on bad things. There's a danger to that. But if you don't pay any attention, I can guarantee you more bad things will happen. A lot more bad things. Look around you. Look at what's going on. It's great that you're paying attention. And if your friends don't want to pay attention, well, you know, that's their decision. You can only try so hard before you become tiresome to them and they'll just tune you out. But there are many, many people like you out there who will listen, who do care, and you know what? Who will make a difference. The reason is the same, because so few people care. That means even fewer people will make a difference because there are so few of them out there. You can be one of those people. So seek out, whether it's in real life or on the internet or by talking to people through me on the radio, seek out those people who do care and are willing to do something to fight for their beliefs, to change the system, to make the world a better place. There's no better feeling than knowing you did something. And hats off to you for caring. All right, we're out of time. Next week, we'll be somewhere else. OTW at 2600.com is our address. We'd love to hear from you. And another sad note, the passing of Tommy Makem from the Clancy Brothers. Let's listen to this as our tribute. Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Wall. Have a good night.
Are you this may tell now and you are the adventure shall you by me on your spare van uncle dog came up brought a long time laying yellow may start low the breast of your tiny vine. Darling, they end all the poem is a rare me knows him. A gravel departure is the higher on the lunch clear being a goyer upon Krishna ground. Oh, I know thank you.
la parger o ha yam he konar sayam notir akma hashi dre rocher ma ben
listening to WUSB, Stony Brook.